The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
And hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Need to Know. I'm Kip Kiefer, and excited, as always, to be here with you this week. Happy New Year to everybody. I hope 2023 is off to a fantastic start. I'm actually a little more excited than usual to bring you this program because it's an opportunity to talk about something that is great about our country as opposed to all the things that are wrong. And it was really kind of a spiritual week on so many levels. This is a story that checks all the boxes in terms of intellect and emotion and belief systems and tradition. It's really one of those situations where it's a rare opportunity to kind of summarize and tell you a lot of things that you may not be aware of, hence need to know. So let's get right to it here because it's rather involved, and I'm sure a lot of you are guessing already that what we're going to talk about were the events of just a week ago on New Year's Day. Actually, the 2nd of January, I should say. New Year's Day was last Sunday. New Year's Day was on Monday. It felt like New Year's Day because there were college bowl games being played, including the heralded Rose Bowl, which was kind of a bummer because it was against a 3-loss Utah team who won the Pac-12 conference and Penn State who finished a distant third in the Big Ten. So not exactly a compelling matchup, especially coming off the scintillating games in the college football playoff on Saturday, the first time we've ever had back-to-back semifinal games that have been outstandingly entertaining and come right down to the wire. And we had experienced that on Saturday, so it was kind of an afterthought to have games on Monday, but that's just how the schedule worked out because of the complete chaos of the New Year's Day holiday falling on a Sunday, which of course is the NFL day. So Monday football was a little bit less than satisfying, let's say, until the Monday night football game on ESPN, because this was the game of the day. This was the NFL clash between two of the most talented young teams, major contenders for the Super Bowl. Both were on tremendous winning streaks. The Cincinnati Bengals hosting the Buffalo Bills, and this is a game that everybody was looking forward to and anticipating. It was must-see TV, and I think the nation tuned in mass on Monday night, just after the New Year's weekend, a perfect time for a monumental clash between two great teams. And what's more American than thinking about this game, these two fantastic teams from hard-working, predominantly blue-collar towns like Buffalo, New York, and Cincinnati, Ohio. It's one of the great things about America. It doesn't need to be New York against Los Angeles or Chicago against Dallas. This was Buffalo and Cincinnati in the big game, and they've got a lot of the most exciting young stars playing football right now, and it was just a great joyride and much anticipated for football fans. And the game was living up to its hype in the first quarter. Joe Burrow led the Cincinnati offense down the field. They scored a quick touchdown against the Buffalo defense, but then Josh Allen, equally brilliant in the Buffalo uniform, led his team down around the 10-yard line before that drive stalled. They kicked a field goal. So about 7 minutes into the game, it was 7-3 Cincinnati. The Bengals had the ball back. They were starting to move. They're around midfield when it happened. And what happened, again, is just runs the spectrum of a story that it took on so many forms and has so many repercussions and has so many important impressions after it occurred that now a week later we can talk about all the aspects of it. But at the time, it was horrifying. It was something that no one expected. It was something that is so rare and so unknown phenomenon and medically to most individuals, and we're going to try to explain all of that here. But on a seemingly routine play, the Bengals receiver T. Higgins had caught a short pass. He's a big guy. He was running full speed down the field, and coming up from the safety position was second-year player D. Ham, is what they call him. His actual name is Damar Hamlin, number three, the safety for Buffalo, who's a second-year player in the NFL out of the University of Pittsburgh. And Damar Hamlin made what looked to be a routine tackle, not a colossal, massive hit. But he made the tackle, took T. Higgins down, and got to his feet and looked like he attempted to take a step. But if you've watched a lot of football and you've been around it as long as I have, you recognize when something is awry. And in this case, something was terribly wrong because Hamlin, again, looked like he was trying to take a step away from the tackle, and he just collapsed. He just went down, and he didn't go down in the manner of, you know, you see in a conventional injury where fall to his knees or go to his hands and knees. I mean, he collapsed, and you've seen it before. If somebody faints, that was exactly what that looked like. So your first thought watching the game was, oh my God, he's had some kind of head injury and he's passed out. But, you know, they even showed the replay of the tackle right about that time, and there didn't seem to be any of that kind of trauma. So immediately the medical personnel and the training staff of the Buffalo Bills took the field to attend to him, and you knew something was amiss right away because the players kind of formed a human wall all around what was happening because there was the most dramatic situation going on the field that could be possibly imagined. Medical professionals and the real heroes in this story, and there are so many of them, and that's what makes it a great American story. The real true heroes in this saga were the people who responded from the sidelines. And we are living in an era in NFL football where not only is there an elaborate athletic staff for every team, and these are degreed positions. You can go to college now, major in sports medicine, learn all the aspects of taking care of players and injuries and maintaining all variety of sports. And the NFL, of course, has more of those folks on board than any other entity. Not only that, but every team, and this has been going on for a long time, every team has a staff of medical professionals, doctors and specialists, orthopedists, yes, cardiologists, all kinds of different people on the sidelines for medical emergencies and medical serious injury predominantly to deal with. So all of those people raced onto the field, and it became readily apparent that something was really wrong by the way the other players were reacting and the fact that suddenly the Cincinnati staff all took the field, the medical staff. You knew something was really wrong and really terrible was happening. It was really horrifying to watch. Not only do you have those medical professionals on both teams on the sidelines, the NFL now, because of all the concussion protocols and all of the accusations that, well, somebody employed by the team to be there is going to be pressured into releasing that player back into games when it's not appropriate. So the NFL has added another layer of medical protection. Their own professionals are on the sidelines, and their job is to determine the fitness of a player, and they can overrule the team's medical staffs. The point is, if you're ever having a serious cardiac event, probably the best place to be is at an NFL football game. as odd as that sounds, but as far as the immediate response, everything aligned in the stars to make this a situation that was immediately addressed, because DeMar Hamlin, as he lay on the field, was not just injured. He had suffered cardiac arrest, and it's such a rare occurrence. And let's give the medical professionals so much credit, because typically what happens in these situations, you don't know a player that's down and seemingly not even responsive. There's hesitation to move the player around much because you don't know what you're dealing with. But that's not what happened here. One of these heroes made an immediate assessment that this fella isn't breathing. We've got to take emergency measures. And within a minute of the collision and the tackle, they were applying CPR. And again, it wasn't readily noticeable watching on the field because the players had surrounded the scene because they saw what was going on and realized the severity of the situation. And you could also tell the raw emotion that players were showing. I mean, the most elite athletes, these men, 6'4", 300 pounds, with tears just pouring out of their eyes watching this scene. It was so amazing in a morbid kind of horrifying way to watch the reactions of the other players as this human drama played out. High above the stadium, ESPN broadcast crew, Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, who have been together for many years in the NFL booth, when they went back to them, they could, from their vantage point, they could see what was happening. And that was the first report that CPR was being administered. And it took it to another level of concern, of course, because immediately you recognized this is a life and death situation. How could this possibly have happened? And they really didn't know what to say. And it was the first time. Now, you already saw players kneeling, but you heard Joe Buck and Troy Aikman start to refer to, all we can do is pray. All we can do is ask God to intercede. All of a sudden, something in our society that's become totally unfashionable, and for a lot of these broadcast professionals and people that are kind of walking on eggshells, worrying about their own careers and being chastised for being partial or subject to criticism for stressing the principle that helped found this country. Arguably, the reason America exists is because people left all other parts of the world to avoid religious persecution. And it's amazing that all of a sudden, what's basically avoided in modern day society, talking about God and faith and religion, that was the go-to thing when there was nothing left to say. And you could tell the players were on their knees. They were saying prayers. The whole scene was remarkable to witness in terms of the phenomenon of the secularization of the United States and the left progressives' push to try to force religion out of the national narrative. All of a sudden, even though it has become a little bit of an underground activity to practice your faith, all of a sudden it was front and center in the most dramatic and scary and horrifying times. Everyone was looking to the heavens for intercession and to save this young man, 24-year-old DeMar Hamlin. So that being said, that transition was made. They went to the studio, and the folks in the studio, Susie Colbert, who's an outstanding NFL broadcaster and host, was with Booger McFarland, and I'm sorry, I can't recall who the third person in the room. I think it was Adam Schechter, the NFL expert. But they were all making references to the Almighty and praying, and it was surreal, again, because that has become so de-emphasized in our society. And it really doesn't make much sense either. We'll get into that in just a moment. But one of the reasons that people attack Judeo-Christian principles and the founding principles that were based on and even practice or mention of religion or God or faith is because they find it offensive. Now, okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry you're offended if you see a manger scene at Christmas time, or your kid is asked to participate at school in some kind of singing event or play that might have some references to traditional religion. But how is that offensive? I'm not offended. If I see a Muslim spread out his rug and kneel to pray, The last emotion I feel is offended. In fact, I admire people of great faith and spirituality. I don't understand the attack on religion and faith, and that's a sidebar to this story, and we'll get into more of that in a moment. But immediately, one of the things that all the commentators kept saying is, we have never seen anything like this before in the NFL. Well, they were right and they were wrong, because there was actually an incident in 1972 where an NFL player suffered cardiac arrest and actually expired on the field. And his name was Chuck Hughes. Chuck Hughes played for the Detroit Lions. He had run a pass route in a game and didn't come back to the huddle, went down and wasn't even seen immediately. No contact on the play, which made it different than this particular incident. But by the time they got to him and attended him, he was gone. He had passed away. And as facts came out in a strange kind of way, and again, it was constantly repeated that we had never seen anything like this, but we actually had. And the result of that incident had wide-ranging repercussions and arguably is one of the factors that saved the life of Damar Hamlin last Monday night. When Chuck Hughes passed away, of course, there were autopsies and postmortem done, and it was discovered that Chuck Hughes had absolutely terrible arteriosclerosis, which is blockage of arteries around the heart muscle that prevented blood flow. And then it came out, even more amazingly and shockingly, that Chuck Hughes had actually 7 weeks before in the preseason suffered a mild heart attack. So you have to ask yourself, what in the hell was he doing on the field 7 weeks later after suffering a mild heart attack? Of course, diagnostics were not anywhere near what they are now. The process and the operation of clearing that blockage, of course, what is now commonly known as bypass surgery, which you never want to say that it's routine, but it's performed so often now that it's virtually routine because they have learned every nuance of that procedure. It was not developed until 1968. So when Chuck Hughes collapsed in 1972, it was still new and still very risky and, you know, not really commonplace at that time. But Chuck Hughes should have never been on the field. He had arteriosclerosis. He had already had a heart incident. And his death was one of the things that really sparked the modern day, really, some would call it overdoing of medical personnel being involved in the whole process from a diagnostic standpoint to determine your fitness to start with to play football, all the way into emergency treatment if something goes wrong. So what happened to Damar Hamlin? There's no apparent, and it's still too early to make a declaration. It certainly appears with all of the checks and all of the procedures that go on now to prepare a player for fitness for play in the preseason and the offseason, they're constantly monitored medically. The chances that he has some kind of defective heart situation are limited. I mean, it's possible, but the likely culprit in this situation is a condition that I'm sure none of you have ever heard of or are familiar with. It is called commotio cordis. And basically what that is in a situation, and it's highly rare, there's only 20 to 30 reported cases in the entire nation every year statistically. Think about that, 20 to 30. I mean, in that game, DeMar Hamlin had just a probably a better chance of being hit by a meteor falling from the sky than having this occur. But basically what that phenomenon is, commotio cordis, is a situation where a blow to the left chest, right in the heart area, and it has to be perfectly timed with the rhythmic beat of a heartbeat, which is occurring all the time, and I don't know the medical exact description of how that occurs, but it has to be at an exact point of that process playing out. You have electrical impulses that generate every heartbeat throughout your day, and if someone sustains a severe blow to that area right as that process is playing out at a certain point, it can trigger the interruption of those electric impulses and take away the rhythmic sequence that leads to a heartbeat, causing arrhythmia, which is basically your heart not functioning any further and you going into cardiac arrest. And apparently all the evidence suggests that's what happened to DeMar Hamlin. So amazingly, once again, these medical professionals that reported on the scene within seconds of him going down, and I'm sure some of them had observed the way he collapsed, they knew they had something on their hands that was completely foreign to what they prepared for. But there was enough really great doctors and medical personnel that immediately performed the treatments that would ultimately save this young man's life, because he had no heartbeat. And this went on for, it seemed like 7 or 8 minutes. I'm even hearing reports today that this CPR process occurred for 12 minutes because they were trying to restore some kind of heartbeat, and then they could apply the defibrillation equipment to try to get the rhythm back and the electrical impulses re-stimulated that lead to a heartbeat. And at some point, they finally, with all of that, succeeded on the field as, you know, basically everybody in America was tuned in, just holding their breath and praying for a miraculous resolution. This young man, let's just call it what it was. He was basically dead on the field, and these guys brought him back, and they brought the ambulance on the field. They gingerly loaded him in. His mom was in the stadium that night. Even though she's from Pittsburgh, she was in Cincinnati for the game. She was able to come down and ride the 5-mile journey to the UC Medical Center, which is a Class 1 trauma center. All of the stars, again, aligned, because in these kind of circumstances, which, again, are unbelievably rare, of commotio cordis, the survival rate typically is only about 34%, and that is not a very good statistic if you were in the position that Mr. Hamlin was in at that time. But they made the proper moves, got him to the UC Medical Center, and he went, of course, directly into intensive care. They had also hooked up oxygen and breathing materials on the field, hoping to keep enough oxygen flow to his brain, because it's really a scary prospect in these situations while they're trying to revive you. If your oxygen is, if your brain is being deprived of oxygen, that's a real problem too, of course. And so America just waited and prayed and hoped, and they wanted, it's amazing the spirit of Americans in times of adversity. People just were frustrated because there was no information, and they wanted to do something to show their support. They prayed, and they also stepped up. DeMar Hamlin has a lot of, he has a couple of different charitable functions and foundations, and people started a GoFundMe situation and started just contributing money to the DeMar Hamlin Foundation, which helps inner city kids and does a lot of different things. And within the blink of an eye, overnight, $7 million appeared, and now that total has run up to about $8 million. People just wanting to do something to express their support and wishes of well-being and health for this stricken young man who had suffered the most bizarre fate you could ever imagine. And they came through big time with financial contributions for his foundation. So that's another amazing aspect of the story. I don't think since 2001 and the 9/11 attacks that this country was ever this united. This is a time of severe divisiveness, total disagreement. Everybody was on the same page for DeMar Hamlin on Monday night and all through the week. And we all just agonized for days hearing he was still in ICU, still in critical condition. And then the breakthrough came on Thursday when doctors actually addressed the media. And their first words were so uplifting and so miraculous and so wonderful that DeMar Hamlin is showing amazing progress. And the really key part of that was, and as far as his neurological activity, it is completely intact. So the deprivation of oxygen to his brain did not occur. He woke up in a cognitive state, of course, hooked up to all kinds of breathing materials. It was obvious that he wanted to communicate. They gave him a pencil and paper. He had the ability, the motor skills to write a question. And his three-word question for his doctors and the people that were surrounding him at the time endears him forever to every sports fan and football fanatic in the world, because the first thing he wrote down on that pad was, "Did we win?" He woke up not worrying about him or where he was or how he got here or what's going on. He wanted to know if the Buffalo Bills had beaten Cincinnati. Of course, he didn't know. The game had been postponed. And there was a lot of controversy on social media that night, people demanding the game be called off. And in the confusion and the treatment of DeMar Hamlin, you know, there was no urgency to decide the fate of the game at that time. People were really overreacting to that. Social media blew up, demanding the NFL step in. There was no chance when he was still in the condition he was in that game was ever going to resume. You couldn't ask either of those teams, especially the Bills, to get back on the field and play football when their guy was fallen and they didn't know what his situation was. That wasn't going to happen. So a lot of that was really unfounded. And then there was all kinds of nasty comments. You know, everybody was united for the well-being of DeMar Hamlin. But even like on Tuesday morning on The View, the absolutely abhorrent and really truly stupid Joy Behar made some kind of ridiculous comment about, well, football, you know, just this ultimate macho masculine thing. And, you know, you've got all kind, and she singles out, this is what amazes me, she singles out in that white conservatives pushing their kids to partake in football, and it we really need to take a look at that game. This had nothing to do with football. This could have happened in any bit of circumstances. Again, it's the most bizarre occurrence you can possibly imagine. It usually happens in baseball or hockey, where a projectile can be rocketed right into that area and cause this problem. But that's even rare. I told you it's 20 to 30 cases per week or per year, which is, I mean, not even a blip on the radar. This is a really bizarre situation that occurred. And attacking football is absolutely inappropriate and stupid. So Joy Behar, you know, just can it. I said a couple of years ago, I'd like to go back to New York City, but there's a 1 in 8 million chance I'd run into Joy Behar, and I don't like those odds. So anyway, it's a great story. Damar Hamlin actually FaceTimed with his teammates on Friday, did a little recording for the kickoff to the game for yesterday in Buffalo against the New England Patriots, where he said, "Let's go, it's game day." People just went crazy. There were emblems with his number on every NFL uniform yesterday. Before every game, every team kneeled and prayed for his well-being and recovery. This is a spiritual, just complete, wonderful story, and I hope everybody is aware and appreciative of the fact that what we witnessed was nothing short of a miracle with everything that came together. And people that have been basically agnostic and secular, I've heard commentators say, well, it just goes to show you the power of prayer is still a mighty force. And that is the best lesson we've learned to walk away from this. Let's not get away from who we are. This was a miracle. This was amazing. And I hope that everyone has been able to watch it and experience it and really can kind of take away now what looked like it was going to be the ultimate tragedy and just terribly sad story has become this uplifting miracle because of this remarkable young man and the people who saved his life. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thought you needed to know some of those facts that maybe aren't out there in circulation. Can't wait to talk to you again next week.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.